At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Courtney Gray, Life and Body Coach. It is my pleasure to welcome you to another episode of the Road to Rediscovery podcast with Aubrey Johnson. Happy listening.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on the Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, take it to the next level and uplift others who are struggling through tough times. A quick reminder that you can hear this podcast anywhere you get your shows, all right? If you listen on Apple Podcasts, we ask that you please give us a rating and a review. Otherwise, send us some feedback at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. We truly, truly are grateful for your listenership. My special guest is a psychologist, emotional eating expert, author, and host of the Too Much on Her Plate podcast. She's helped thousands of women break cycles of overeating and being overwhelmed with the daily demands of life. She's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Women's Health, Self, and many, many other publications. Ladies and gentlemen, let's please welcome Dr. Melissa McCreary to the show. Melissa, it's so great to have you here. Welcome.
What an introduction. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, thank you so much. We're pleased to have you here, as you can hear. So, Melissa, if you don't mind, if we can start by having you share with us, we're just going to dive right in, okay? What are some of the common societal misnomers, right, when it comes to overeating habits?
Well, boy, there are so many, but I think... The biggest problem is that we start in the wrong place. Mm. When people are ready to make a change with their eating, when people are ready to make a change with weight, the logical thing seems to be, and we are reinforced over and over and over again in society, to start with the food. Change your eating. What are you going to eat? When are you going to eat? Right. When are you going to not eat? What are you not going to eat? Like, you know, let's get obsessed about the food. The problem is, if we are going to talk about overeating and emotional eating, especially in women, we have to talk about hidden hungers. We have to talk about the very common reasons that not only that overeating happens, but that overeating and food and dealing with it in a way that we don't want has so much power in so many people's lives.
Right. Right. Man, that's tremendous. And it does have a tremendous amount of power over people's lives. And I mean, you know, there's no denying that emotions do get involved, and the emotions can trigger those habits. And there can be a pattern, I guess, behind that. You spoke of the hidden hungers. And from what I understand, you've helped or over 32,000 women have taken this hidden hungers quiz. Has there been, or do you know of any, like, what are some of the breakthroughs or the revelations that has come from taking that quiz?
Well, yeah, I'd be happy to share some of those. So the quiz, which is a free quiz, which is available on my website, was really designed because when we start talking about the reasons that people overeat, and by the way, one of the reasons it is so important to know the reasons that you're overeating is that if all you do is try to rearrange your food and you don't address the reasons that food has the power that it does, then you end up in a vicious cycle, right? Because those reasons are still there driving the whole the whole pattern and the habits. And so one of the reasons that I created the quiz was that when we start to talk about the reasons, exhaustion, being too busy, stress, you'd mentioned emotions, there are a couple of others. When we start to talk about those, a lot of people, their eyes start to glaze over and they start to get overwhelmed talking about the reasons because they're like, Melissa, I have all of those. The reasons tend to travel together, right? If you have stress and you're probably too busy and you have stress and you're too busy and then you get exhausted. And so it was created, you know, the idea of looking at the reasons can feel overwhelming. And the quiz was designed, I designed the quiz so that we could simplify things so that you could answer a few questions and identify, okay, yes, I have three of them or four of them or five of them, but this is the primary one. This is the best place to start. And again, we're dealing with overwhelm and overload. Like, here is one step that I can start to take that will start to deconstruct these things, that will start to detangle all of these things that can seem so overwhelming on face value. And when we feel overwhelmed, talk about emotional eating. When we feel overwhelmed, it is much easier to end up in the kitchen staring at the pantry and with a jar of peanut butter in your hand, wondering how you got there.
Yeah, it truly is, right? In a lot of cases, it's a temporary relief or a Band-Aid, without truly addressing the root cause of the eating habit. And you mentioned stress earlier, and I know your focus is on those who turn to eating or emotional eating as a result of the stress they're going through. But, you know, we have, and I wonder, why is this? And what insights you have on mindset when it comes to why some people are so quick to have their go-to in an emotional distress type of event to food, okay, versus others that may go to drinking or may go to gambling or may go to some other type of vice, maybe exercising, what is it how we're made up? Is it how we're wired? What causes one to gravitate towards one versus the other?
One thing over the other? I think that's a complicated question to answer. I think there probably are a number of different reasons, and there are layers, right? There's what we were taught. One reason that emotional eating and overeating is such an issue, I tend to work with busy, high-achieving women.
Yes.
And one of the reasons that food becomes the kind of the go-to of choice or the coping strategy of choice is that it is easy. It is everywhere. Women especially are conditioned from most of their lives that food is available to be used and also to be given to others to take care of all sorts, for comfort, for a reward, for a distraction.
Yeah.
And then again, another piece of this that is sometimes different for women than for men in terms of how we are socialized is that eating is something that you can do to try to take care of yourself, right? Comfort, reward, any of that stuff that doesn't take away from anybody else. You can keep right on plowing through your to-do list. You can keep right on, driving the kids to soccer, doing the 50 million things that you're doing while you are, in air quotes, taking care of yourself. You don't have to stop. You don't have to say no to anybody else. So it can be a very seductive, but you're right, temporary fix, right? For getting through. And that can develop into a cycle that people don't know how to break.
Makes sense. No, it makes a lot of sense. And before we go further, if we can just clarify for the listeners and level set for them, if you can tell us when it comes to, is there a difference or are they synonymous between someone who has overeating habits and someone with an eating disorder? Are they mutually exclusive? Are they two of the same? If you can just shed some light on that for us.
Yeah, it's a good question. You can have overeating habits and have an eating disorder. And by eating, you know, I think what you're referring to with an eating disorder is something that is a clinical diagnosis, that that there's a medical diagnostic code that you get, and that insurance pays for treatment and all that that kind of stuff. You can have overeating habits and have an eating disorder, and and you can have overeating habits and not fit the the criteria for a clinical diagnosis. I work with people who, you also can have overeating issues or emotional eating issues and not have a weight issue. This is not necessarily about weight. I work with a lot of my clients tell me two things. Number one, they are just sick and tired of food and eating and what to eat and when to eat, and sometimes often weight, taking up so much real estate in their head. They are so tired of thinking about it. They are tired of waking up in the morning and having it define whether it's a good day or a bad day. They're tired of jumping around on the scale because, and having that feel tied to their self-worth. So that's one thing that's really important. The other thing that I hear from people that I work with all the time, and I think that is really important, which is related, is that they don't like their relationship with food. Maybe it's taking up too much time. Maybe they just feel bad about it. Maybe, and for me, and I'm working outside of this is a clinical diagnosis area. If you're not happy with your relationship with food, you get to change it. Right.
Yes.
Whether whatever your weight is, and it doesn't have to be tied to weight. You know, we live in this culture that gives us all sorts of, criteria about how we are supposed to look and what we are supposed to weigh. And, you know, diet culture has been incredibly destructive.
And I wanted to ask you if the word diet, and there's the word diet, then there's fad diet. I mean, and this is kind of meta, but is the word diet going out of the English language in terms of what it meant 30 years ago versus what it means today? Is it no longer a fad? Is what was interpreted as a diet 30 years ago, is it more harm than helpful?
Oh, so we know diets don't work.
Yeah.
We know that there is an industry making billions of dollars.
Yes.
On the fact that they don't work, because guess what? If they did, we wouldn't have an industry.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
No, diets won't work. Mm-hmm. It has become a thing now to talk about things that are really diets while reassuring people these are not diets, because diets have gotten, you know, people have gotten the memo that diets don't work and that they are destructive. But there's still a ton of advice out there that is based on, I talk about deprivation mentality, which is diet thinking, right? Going without, going hungry, restricting, actually basically a plan that makes you miserable. And somehow the idea is you will stay on this plan forever, I guess, because I mean, there's this, you do these things to lose this weight, and then there's either no off ramp or no plan of what you're supposed to do, or you're supposed to do that forever. It doesn't make sense.
Not sustainable. No.
But there's a lot of advertising out there telling, you know, getting people excited about it.
It totally is. And kind of on the flip side or the other side of the coin, Melissa, is, this term has been tossed around a lot, right? But I want to know your take on it. If it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle. Okay. what is your take on that? Lifestyle. I don't know. I see some advancement in the meaning of it versus a diet, but it's been tossed around and used much and overused that it's kind of losing its luster, at least with me. What's your thoughts?
I love this question. So the reason that I do what I do is because I basically talked to one too many brilliant women who had achieved incredible things in their life And because of all this, you know, all this cultural stuff, all these messages, you know, they've done the impossible, whether it was professionally or with their kids or with whatever. They're just amazing, smart people who are sitting across from me saying, well, I know I'll always struggle with this, or I know this is always going to be something I'm going to have to work really hard. I'm really going to have to stay on top of this. Food is always going to be an issue for me. And that whole idea of lifestyle choice, I, you know, can mean a lot of things, but for some women, it has come to mean food, you know, paying obsessive attention to my eating or my weight or my fitness or my health is always, it's going to have to be my lifestyle. And the reason I do what I do is because I know that you can put things into place and leave this stuff behind. You can, and that is why the hidden hunger concept is so important, because when you really address the reasons that food has the power, the reasons that are compelling the cravings, and you really take care of those things, you're not fighting with food anymore. Right. And and so I talk about a relationship with food. I have a relationship with food because by the way, it's a lifetime relationship, right? It's not like you can't go cold turkey. You can't abstain.
No, you can't.
Right. It's and so.
Right.
But it doesn't have to take, like, I have a relationship with food, but I'm not thinking about it all the time. I'm not waking up in the morning and thinking, oh, how will that go today? Right. It's it's a good relationship. And we are not taught that. We're taught that we have to do things and monitor things and track things and stay on top of things. And there is a whole different way to tackle overeating and emotional eating that I guess it's a lifestyle, but it just hums along in the background. I mean, maintaining my blood pressure is a lifestyle too, but I thankfully don't have blood pressure issues, and I don't think about it, right? It just works for me. And your relationship with food can be like that too.
I agree completely. You can have a healthy relationship with food, for sure, for sure. I'm going to mention a phrase that I've heard regarding food. And again, I want to hear your take on it. Is one better than the other? Because it's a two-part phrase. Or are they mutually important? Or are they both important together? The phrase is this: simply put, eat to live, live to eat.
I did an interview recently with someone who was very clear. He's a health and fitness person, and he, I guess it's eat to live. You know, his whole philosophy was, well, food is just fuel. Food is just fuel. That is what food is.
Okay.
I don't buy it. And I've been doing this work for 25 years, and I know there are a lot of people out there who are like, oh, if I could only think that way. But think about it. Food and eating are one of the, you know, one of the few experiences that touch all of our senses, right? Food is an amazing thing. And there are people who could take food or leave it, and they don't really, you know, enjoy it so much. But but I think part of what happens in deprivation mentality is we get this idea that we're not allowed to enjoy food. We're not allowed to savor. We're not allowed to get pleasure from food. And so I don't know what to do with your two phrases, but that whole eat to live thing,
It's kind of tough to take. I mean, to me, it's almost it, here's the irony, at least that I find in this. The eat to live is almost emotionless for me. It's so mechanical sounding, right? Where like you said, your guest says it's fuel. It's fuel. You're doing it for fuel. It doesn't care how it tastes. It's fuel for your body, right? And I think there should be more of an emotional association with it than just eat to live. But here we are, you and I, talking about emotional overeating, right? And having the emotions drive overeating.
But here's the thing, Aubrey, this is such a great point, because the other side of it, live to eat, and I will hear from a lot of people who are in
Thanks for listening. To hear the full conversation, please subscribe to our premium channel by visiting roadtorediscovery.com.